Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Cross Courts Conversations, the show where we take the also serious sport of tennis and turn it into just two fellas chopping it up about their favorite sport. First of all, we would like to thank you all for the support you showed us during our debut episode. We really, really appreciate all the likes, the comments, the criticisms that we got from parents saying it was too long or something. Man, just listen to it. You'll be fine.
Literally the first thing my dad said, he didn't even start playing it. He said, an hour and 32 minutes. You want me to listen to this?
Like, bro, you retired.
It's normal podcast length.
Exactly,
like, come on,
exactly.
Just give it a listen.
That's exactly what I said. But, you know, the support, like, it meant so much to us, right? That we decided to turn things up a notch for the second episode. We thought, you know what? Let's truly buckle it down. Let's super professionalize this thing. So what did we do? We sent Jason down under for the Australian Open. But did you know, impossible to find anything in Melbourne at this time, considering the Australian Open starts this weekend. So we send him instead to Auckland, but it's the same thing. It's like right there anyways, right?
So there's tennis on at the moment, ASB Classic. I couldn't even get tickets to that.
Yeah, so Australian Open, forget it. But we do have a correspondent down under, and speaking of...
So if you want us to be courtside next time, our Patreon will be linked in the description below. Minimum donation, $300. We got to get those tickets next time.
Yeah, next year we have to be right there, because right now we only have one correspondent for our Australian Open 2025 preview. Speaking of the Australian Open, which is what our episode is going to be about, how excited are you, Jason, about this year's Australian Open?
I mean, I'm always excited about the Australian Open, but this year, I think there's a lot of storylines that, you know, I make this year even more interesting. You know, you've got, for me, it's the sinner Alcaraz is coming back. This will be sort of not a make or break year for the rivalry, but they could take it to the next level. Also, are we going to see Djokovic play a role at all this year? We've already seen bits of him in Brisbane that maybe weren't up to standard that we're used to seeing from him. And there's just so many talking points on the women's side of the draw as well. Can Sabalenka create one of the most dominant years in women's tennis? Coco Gauff is coming off some extremely good form at the moment. Can she challenge? Kim Nguyen is also there as well. And then, you know, there's also that eager person,
right?
Like, who's also quite good at tennis.
Yeah.
So,
but she just can't seem to get it going on these slams. So you never know, right? No, I'm completely on the same boat. I mean, it's the first slam of the year. You know, to me, it's always like a good indication of like where is this year gonna go, right? I mean, last year, if you listen to our first episode, both our player of the years were Jannik Sinner and Aryna Sabalenka, who both happened to win the Australian Open. So it kind of sets a precedent for like historic seasons to come sometimes, not always, but it's always like a good way to see like who's going to have a good year. And it's big pants tennis time, you know, Grand Slam. It's not, no shade to the ASB Classic, but it's not really the same.
Yeah, the stage is huge in Melbourne. First Grand Slam of the year. Everyone's super hyped. I've always really liked the vibe at the Australian Open as well.
Me too. Something about the fans, right?
Yeah, maybe it's also I think it goes with like the time zone as well. Like, if that makes sense. Like, it's always been good for me to watch while I'm here in New Zealand. And actually, when I moved to the Netherlands, it's not that bad. You catch a lot of the night session games as well.
Exactly.
And there's been a lot of great Australian Open matches down the years, a lot of history there. Of course, it wasn't always the biggest slam, you know, back in the day. They had a little teaser trailer when I was watching TV yesterday, and they showed the years gone by from, you know, the 50s when they were playing it on grass and stuff like that. And there was a period where it was only Australians winning because, I mean, it was a bit of a trek to come down under and, you know, play a tournament.
On boat. Like, you had to go on ship to go to Australia. Like, I don't even know how long that is, to be honest.
Like, I don't know. And they definitely didn't have tennis courts on the ships to train back. Like, it's not like you're on the coast of Concordia. Like,
no, you're getting scurvy, my guy. Like, you're getting scurvy.
You've got a bag full of lemons just to keep the scurvy at bay.
Oh wait, because like,
you're just squirting that shit in your mouth.
Yeah, you gotta go play 5-set tennis the second you're off. So drink your lemon juice, my guy. Like,
drink your lemon juice. But yeah, let's look at the draw a little bit. Obviously, at this stage, the draws aren't out, but we do have an idea of where the seeds are.
Exactly. The seeds came out, so the seeds we have now. So yeah.
So what are your opening thoughts? What are some surprises that, or maybe some issues that we see in the draw?
I mean, we can start with the ATP tour first. I think the biggest thing that everybody sees is Novak Djokovic being outside of a top four seed, meaning that one of the top four, Sinner, Zverev, Alcaraz, or Taylor Fritz, will have to play the boogeyman, like the guy who has won the Australian Open the most times.
Has he got 10?
He's got 10, right? Like 10 slams. Just 10 slams in a career is insane. He has 10 of one. And I think that, yeah, he's going to be a huge... Of course, like you said, we don't know what form he's going to come into. Like, was last year just sort of an off year that he was so focused on the Olympics? We don't know. And like you said, I watched the game against Rayleigh Opelka. Honestly, I don't put too much weight onto that result, because I think Rayleigh Opelka could have beat anybody that day because he was unreal. He played out of his mind. So yeah, and honestly, like, Novak isn't really a guy who's played many warm-up tournaments through the Australian Open, so, you know.
No, this is one of the only ones, because he's never actually, I don't think he's ever won in Brisbane before.
No, he said that in his interview, right? That like, oh, it's a title I'd like to get or something.
Yeah, cheeky prick.
That's why I love him, man. That's why I love him.
I've won every Masters 1000 twice. I've won all the Grand Slams. I've got my Olympic gold. But what I really would like is the ATP. Is it a 250 or a
250? It's a 250. It's a 250, yeah.
A 250 in Brisbane would really complete
for
my career.
For title 100 as well. Like, how ironic would it be?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it would have been title 100 if he got it.
Okay, it would be kind of iconic if he got his 100th title in Australia, like his 100th title.
You're moving too far ahead on favorites now. You're moving too far ahead on who might win.
No, I'm not saying he's a favorite. I don't. Okay, but let's. Okay, we got Novak in there at the 7. He's obviously further down the seedings than he's ever been, and I don't think any of those guys, even though we don't know what form he's coming in on, no one's going to want to play him in a semi-final or a quarter-final. Taylor Fritz especially, he's going to be quaking in his boots. But yeah, other than that, on the men's side, I think some players that are capable of an upset that are further down the rankings, obviously we got Mpeshi Perricard as well. Also, Daniil Medvedev is at the 5, is he?
Yeah.
He's 5th now. So, you know, I think, yeah, it's pretty tight towards the top end of the draw. So it's going to be very interesting. And I think we could be getting some very interesting matchups earlier in the draw than we have in years previous. So men's side of the draw looking very, very spicy.
Yeah, and with three Aussies in the top 32 seeds since 1982, those being Alex de Minaur, Alexei Popperin, Jordan Thompson, 10 Australians in total.
Do not forget, Nick Kyrgios is there.
Hopefully, because he might be injured. It came out today that he had to pull out of his exhibition against Novak because he might be injured. Like, that was, I put Christ in my notes, and Nick Kyrgios is back. And then today I looked at the news and I was like, never mind.
What a shame.
Yeah. So, but speaking of shame, I think it's time we move on to the WTA Tour. Big shame is the loss of Wimbledon champion Barbara Krejcikova. She has confirmed that her back injury has not healed in time and she will be absent. That pushes Danielle Collins into the top 10, who I thought retired, but I guess not.
I thought she retired as well.
Yeah, it was like her whole thing, like, I'm done after this year, but I guess not.
Maybe I think she's got a bit of a vendetta against someone.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she made it her profile picture on Instagram, her face against when she's shaking Iga's hand. I love it, man. I love it.
I hate that. I think Iga's just trying to play tennis out here, just doing her best to win games. And then you've got Danielle Collins, who, a goddamn retiree, who is like, you know, I've never beaten you. I've never laid a glove on you. Or I don't know. Maybe she's beaten her once. I don't know. My career is like here. Yeah, I'm old and you're young and I can't do anything. Our careers aren't even remotely comparable. But let me throw shade at every opportunity that I can get. It's pathetic.
I love it. Like, I love it.
It's really, it's punching down. I think it's so pathetic. She's leading the way for Crybaby of the Year, Nick Kyrgios Award 2025.
At the right moment, now, she has to be, she's a big favorite. She's a big favorite. But it's one that I would give with lots of love because I love Danielle Collins. I think she's great.
But early days in that award. But yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the women's draw. Anything that stands out to, I mean, for me, I would like to see, actually no, I'm going to save that for later, bringing that up. But yeah, obviously Barbara not there. I'm not Barbara's biggest fan, to be honest. I don't find her play style particularly interesting. I don't find her particularly interesting on the court either, just to as a personality. So yeah, but obviously it is sad, especially considering the year that she had last year. She is a great player. So it does suck that she's out of the draw. But yeah, anything else that stood out to you on the women's side of the draw?
Yeah, I think, you know, that we have like confirmed entry list. It seems like Naomi Osaka is going to play. Emma Raducanu is also in the draw. A little bit disappointing with the Australian woman, with only Olivia Gadecki being in on like merit, I guess, because the rest are wild cards. I think the return of Belinda Bencic after becoming a mother, congratulations. She's always somebody that like seemed like she could have done something. Like, she's a very good player. We just haven't seen
her
in some time.
Is she a US Open champ?
No, she's an Olympic gold medalist, I think.
Okay.
You know, it's just like cool to have her back. She has, I'm not sure if she is seeded in the end, but she has like a special ranking that puts her like 15th in the world or something for Australia.
Oh, she's protected ranking.
Yeah, it was like a special one given to her because she went, like, she wasn't injured because, yeah, she left the tour to go have a kid. So,
yeah, I believe you can protect your ranking points for a year or something.
Something like that, right? It looks like, it looks like it's going to be a great Australian Open, right? Like, as always. So, with that, there are definitely certain players that we need to highlight.
Exactly. And first thing that we want to highlight is something we like to call the gambler's dream. Tequila. So, our first little segment in today's episode, the gambler's dream. Now, this, we've chosen a player, male and female, who we think is going to be capable of a huge upset this year. Maybe not go all the way, but could knock out one of the top guys or girls early on. Juan, who have you got?
So let's start with the WTA tour, since we just talked about the ATP tour first on the draw. So maybe it's a little bit cheating because I picked a seeded player here, and I was trying to look for somebody unseeded, but honestly, the more I looked at Yulia Putintseva, the less I could get away from her. She already beat Iga at Wimbledon last year, and it was seen as kind of a big shock. She's achieved her highest career ranking at this point. She's world number 25. She has 3 career titles, which, you know, not everybody can boast that. Never on a hard court, so it's not like she's some hard court specialist or something. But she is in the form of her life. Like, she is currently playing in Adelaide, and she took out Donna Bekic and then Ons Jabeur, both in straight sets. Honestly, I was between her and Ons Jabeur, and then Yulia beat her, and I picked Yulia Putintseva instead. I feel like she could get maybe, like, she could beat Iga again, or maybe, because I feel like even if she plays somebody like Naomi Osaka, Osaka would still be a gambler's favorite. Like, she would be the favorite to win that match. And I think that Yulia Putintseva can't beat these girls. Like, she's a very good tennis player who, you know, she's 30 years old, so it's not like, oh, an up-and-comer, like, look at her, like, she could be the next big thing, but she can definitely stir some stuff up. Like, she played Sabalenka as well, I want to say in Brisbane, or at the US Open, actually, and they had quite a competitive match as well. So, yeah, I don't know why. I have a feeling Yulia Putintseva, like, I'm backing you. I'm backing you to bring me some money.
Fair. What do you know her? What her odds are like?
She wasn't within the odds for to win, so that.
Oh no. Okay, well, I've got outright winner here. Yulia Putintseva, you put $1 on, 176 back. That is that is good money. Should I throw some down right now? I'll put you down for a fiver.
That's a gambler's dream right there.
That's okay. So for me, I actually went for the person that you had second on your list. I've gone for Ons Jabeur because I saw that she beat Danielle Collins. We also talked about her in our 2024 review. Because, you know, she slipped down the rankings big time. She had a terrible year last year. But you know what they say, form is temporary, class is permanent. She's going to be hungry. She's going to be coming for it. She's this, you know, she's, I think she's 30 now. If she wants to get a slam, she's going to be running out of opportunities to do it. She's never really performed that well, I think, at the Australian Open. But who knows? She's coming in, no pressure. We've seen maybe the pressure get to her in previous years and finals and stuff like that. So, who knows? Absolutely nothing expected of her. She's paying 56. So you throw $1 on, you get 56 back. I don't know how to say betting odds properly, where they're like, you know, like the returns or whatever. So I just say $1, you get 56.
I mean,
back,
I think that's right? The best way, because like every person uses a different one. Like I use the American plus 250 odds and yeah, stuff like that, you know. So like,
why make that so complicated? It's $1, I get 56 back. That's the easiest way to calculate.
That's
this,
math.
Right?
I can do that math.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I'm going with Ons Jabeur. I just got a feeling. I just got a feeling she's capable of a little upset.
Okay, I like that. I like that shout. I mean, that, like I said, that's somebody that I also had in mind, and then I went for Yulia Putintseva in the end. But who do you have on the men's side then to cause a little stir?
Men's, I got two Aussies. Two Aussies down here.
Okay.
I got Alex de Minaur.
Okay.
All right, because Alex de Minaur is still not someone who's considered a favorite. He's never, like, you're not, he's not going into a match against Novak, Sinner, or Alcaraz as being like, wow. I think if he comes up against any of those three players, I still think he's going to get swept in three sets, you know? But new season, you don't know what he's done in the offseason. Maybe he's added some weapons to his game because that's what he was missing. He's missing weapons last season. So maybe he's got a little bit more behind his ground strokes, a little bit more behind his serve or something like that. And then he's got the home crowd behind him. Upsets, you can always look to the home crowd. You can always look to the home guys to be on that list of potential upsets. And then my second guy, who gave us one of the biggest upsets last year, is Alexei Popyrin.
Okay, yeah. I was tempted by him.
Had a great year last year. Beat Novak in the US Open. Won a Masters 1000 in Montreal, I want to say.
Yeah, against Rublev.
Yeah. So he's clearly got sauce. I think he lost to Novak last year.
He did,
in the Australian Open, actually. But he did take a set off him. I think he took the first set and then lost in four.
Yeah.
So he's clearly capable of going toe-to-toe with those top guys on his day. And then with the home crowd behind him, I could totally see him beating someone like Daniil Medvedev or Carlos Alcaraz on his day.
Yeah.
You know, because Carlos, I mean, Carlos is also someone who you're still not 100% sure which Carlos you're going to get when he comes out on court.
His floor can be so low compared to a guy like Sinner,
exactly,
who, even if you see Sinner and you're like, oh, he's not really playing as well as he did the other match, he's still playing so well. While Carlos is just like night and day. When his floor is not there, like, he doesn't look like he's very good. Like,
I mean, we said it in our last episode, Sinner didn't lose a match in straight sets the entire year.
Exactly.
And then Carlos lost in straight sets to voted from the Zunskill.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's who I've got for the men's. Two Australians looking to do some business.
I like it. The home favorites. I like it. But I've gone a different route. I've gone for a guy that I swear every time I've watched him play, I'm thinking like, oh yeah, this is the year he's gonna do it. And this time I'm gonna fully back in. My guy, Roman Safiulin. That man.
I'm sorry, who?
Roman Safiulin. Let me tell you about my guy, Roman Safiulin. So he's a junior's god, right? He won the Australian Open as a junior in 2015. And he, like, he's just like a guy that when I watch play, I'm like, oh, you're really good at tennis. Like, why can't you put it together? And he, it always seems like, oh, yeah, he's going to put it together, and then he doesn't. But then, and he's in terrible form as well. Like, he lost in the first round of both Hong Kong and Adelaide, right? So he's in terrible form. But, let me tell you, 70.7 win percentage on hard court. That is impressive. And I'm not saying...
What? How has he done that?
Right? Like, career-wise as well. Like, that's his career win percentage on hard court. Like, it's pretty...
Is he playing only challenges?
Yeah, that I didn't check. I'm not saying that he's going to go and upset, like, a massive guy like Novak or even, like... But, you know, maybe we get to, like, a third round and he plays, like, Tsitsipas or something. Somebody that the public knows... And he'd still, like, you'd still make hella bank betting on Safulin to beat Tsitsipas, I think.
Tsitsipas, yeah, that's true. And Tsitsipas is, you know, up there in the players that you kind of expect to lose at this stage.
I mean,
stage,
in my notes, I wrote, I could see him beat a Tsitsipas or Casper Ruud in a match he should be an underdog in. Like, that's...
Yeah. I think it says a lot about Tsitsipas and Casper Ruud's careers that we kind of immediately throw them in there. As potential guys that are high seeded but could go out pretty early in the competition.
To a monster like Roman Safulin, baby, come on. Buy your Roman Safulin stock, guys. I'm telling you. He's the next guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so he's 27.
Hey, 27, Paulinho no is career, 28, no career. Bro.
No career titles. He has a career high rank of 36. He's currently ranked 62 in the world. His current year-to-date win-loss record, 0-1. He lost in Adelaide two days ago.
Yeah, and in Hong Kong also, like, on the 30th of December. So I also count that as a this season loss. Mm. But you know what they say? Roman wasn't built in a day. So, like, give it some time.
He's been given... I mean, I assume he's been pro for a while now.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he's had 9 years, brother. He's still got no titles.
He'll get there. He'll get there. Trust me.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Our next segment is going to be our dark horse.
30. Now it is time for us to present our dark horse winner for the tournament. So this is a player that we actually see. You know, they're not being seen as like, oh yeah, like they're not being seen as a favorite, maybe not even a top five favorite. But we believe that maybe this is their year to be a dark horse. Like, and I've gone kind of outrageous, in, I think, for my ATP one. Should I start us off with that one, do you think?
Yeah, you throw it out there, yeah.
All right. So I've gone for former Australian Open semifinalist Tommy Paul as my dark horse. And let me tell you why, right? He's coming off his best year as a pro, right? He's been there before, right? He's made a semifinal at the Australian Open. He lost to Novak in straight sets, but, you know, who doesn't lose to Novak in straight sets? I think he's a much better player than he was back then, 2 years ago. I don't think I've ever seen him get tired. He's got like that dog in him where he just keeps playing. But he's got a lot of weapons. Like, he's just like aesthetically a really pleasing player to watch for me for some reason. And somehow he has less odds for him to win the title than Matteo Berrettini, which I think is a little bit ridiculous. Like, I think Matteo Berrettini on his day, like maybe 2-3 years ago, was definitely a better player than Tommy Paul is now. But no way Matteo Berrettini is a better player than Tommy Paul now. The odds had him listed at plus 10,000, meaning if you bet $1, you get 1,000 back. So,
like, yeah, that's what I need. Yeah. Right there, thanks. Okay, so, $1, 1,000 back. Really?
Yeah, which I thought was ridiculous. So I'm fully backing Tommy Paul to win the Australian Open this year.
Wait, where are you looking at those odds?
On CBS, I saw them.
Oh, wait, so if you put $100 on it,
you get 10,000 back.
Oh, you get 10,000 back. So if you put $1 on it, you get 100 back. Am I right? Okay, cool.
I don't know the math.
That's still kind of insane odds. Yeah, I don't do that either. Is he on here? Where's Dummy Paul? Oh yeah, he's paying $1.126 back. Same odds as Hugo Humbert.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Surely, I back Tommy Paul more than Hugo Humbert, to be honest.
Yeah, he's way down in that list. I don't know why he's so far down.
I wouldn't even be surprised if in some books he's below Nadal, who already confirmed his retirement. Like, Nadal is the sixth favorite to win the French Open this year. Like, so people don't fucking check anything, man. Like,
yeah, that's ridiculous. I love how they put Nick, the list that I've got here, they've put Nick Kyrgios right at the top of it, even though his odds aren't the best to win it. But there's clearly a lot of people throwing money down on Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And why wouldn't you? Yeah, why wouldn't you? You know.
Hopefully he plays.
Hopefully he plays. Yeah. My dark horse, I've actually got kind of two different guys.
Right.
My first one, Mr. Impeshi Perricard again.
I knew you were going to say him. That's why I was like, I'm not going to pick him, because I knew you were going to talk about him. Like,
he's my guy. All right. I've watched him play a little bit in the Brisbane and ended up losing to Riley Opelka in the semi-final, but got a win against Francis Tiafoe. He's looking good. He's confident. I think, you know, maybe you can't see him winning the whole thing, because I think as well, if he got deep, like if he made like a quarterfinal, that would already be huge for him, and then the pressure would start to feel pretty heavy. But who knows? Maybe he beats a big seed early on in the tournament, or like in the fourth round, and then maybe things fall his way in the draw, and he's in the later stages of the tournament. It could happen. It could happen. He is someone that I see that has a play style that could really trouble some of the bigger guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Just
someone who kind of goes for his shots. And if you look at upsets in the past against some of the big guys, it is guys like that that can upset some of the big guys, because they don't expect it. They're like,
yeah,
what's happening here? If they're hitting their shots, they're hitting their shots. Like, I've watched the Dustin Brown Rafael Nadal game a couple times from Wimbledon in 2015. I don't know when that game was, but that was a guy who never really went deep anywhere in a tournament, but on that day he just could not miss. He was going for every shot and could not miss. So if he has a day like that against one of these top guys, could beat him. And then my second one is maybe a little bit more realistic, but someone who's possibly not in the favorites talk, but maybe should be, and that's Alexander Zverev.
Wow, okay.
Because I think he was very much talked about a lot of last year because he was playing so well in a lot of these slam tournaments, and it just never quite came to fruition for him. Obviously, a French Open final, lost to Alcaraz in pretty dramatic fashion. But this year, I don't feel the hype around him as much, and maybe that'll help him. Maybe not having that pressure as much, where it's like, I think we're at the point now where maybe we don't expect him to win a slam, despite how good he is. So maybe we'll see something from him. Who knows?
I like that. I like that shout. That's it's definitely a guy who I had in mind for this, but I love Tommy Paul, so I picked him.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's move on to the female side of the draw. Who have you got?
So I've double dipped in the Americas, and I have gone for your favorite billionaire's daughter, Jessica Pegula. That's who I've gone for.
I thought about her as well.
I don't know why. You know what? Like, I was almost gonna put her in my favorites, to be honest. Like, I went a little too crazy on the. I've been drinking too much of that Pegula juice, man. I need to get off it, because like I got a little too hyped about Jessica Pegula. Like, but you know, then I started looking. Like, she's reached the quarterfinals three times in Australia, so you know she has been like into the second week of this slam, and her whole thing was like, oh, she can't get past the quarterfinal. She can't get past the quarterfinal. Will she ever make it? And then she made it all the way to the final of the US Open, the last slam we watched, and she gave Sabalenka like a tough match, like 7-5, 7-5. It was a great match. And I think she beat some great players on her way to this semifinal. She beat Sofia Kenin, who's won a Grand Slam. She beat Diana Schneider, who's seen as like one of these super uber talented players. She beat Iga in the quarterfinals, and then she beat Mukova in the semifinals, and then gave Sabalenka a great match. I would be that's the whole point of the dark horse, right? It would be quite shocking to see them win, but I think Jessica Pegula could make it, honestly. Like, I think she's on probably the best form of her career. Like, she's already played two matches this year. She's playing Adelaide right now, and she's played quite well, like, or maybe only one match actually, but she played well. She beat Maria Sakkari quite handedly, so I don't know why. I have a feeling like Jessica Pegula, like, she might surprise us.
Good shout. Yeah. I never really expect much from Jessica Pegula, to be honest. But for a dark horse,
I didn't. And then suddenly, like, something changed when I watched her play. I can't remember when it was. Maybe it was on her way to making the Cincinnati final. I can't even pinpoint when, but I remember watching her play and going, like, wow, I really like her now. I don't know why.
All right. I've gone with someone that you also mentioned in that little spiel for a second. I've gone with Karolina Mukova.
Yeah.
You know, she's always a player that's capable of upsets. She's very talented player. She has a lot of sauce to her game. I love watching her play. She's, you know, just she can mix it up like no one else. She finished strong last season, final in Beijing, semi-final at the US Open. She beat Paolini at the United Cup. In saying that, she did lose to Coco Gauff and Iga at the United
Cup.
But
she's got, like, a Coco Gauff issue. Like, if you, I think she, I don't know if she's ever beat Coco Gauff. Like, Coco Gauff, for some reason, just has her figured out.
And everyone beats Coco Gauff. So. but yeah, she's like, if you look at her slam results as well, she's definitely not a consistent slam player, but then she'll just randomly be like, I'm in the final of the French Open, or I'm in the semi-final now. You know, she'll just randomly pop up. So she clearly has a lot of quality to her game. It's just whether she can put it together for seven matches in a row.
And yeah, if her health keeps up.
Take out the big guys.
And if her health keeps up, you know, she's had a lot of injury issues. So, but that's who I was going to go for initially. And then I thought, you know what? Nah, let me go for Jess. But yeah, Mukova, great player. And I would honestly love it if she won a slam. Like, if she sort of put herself into the Rybakina, Coco Gauff, Sabalenka, Iga sort of level of tennis player that we have now as, like, a consistent force on the tour and not just, like, random slam winner here, random slam winner there.
Yeah, yeah. She hasn't won a slam, has she?
No.
Finals
she
of this result.
She's made a final, yeah. And she gave Iga a tough match at French Open. It was close. It was definitely her toughest one that she's played, Iga.
So, yeah. Karolina Mukova, you can always bet on the Czechs to do something as well. The Czech, especially Czech women's tennis, is they're always there or thereabouts. So
I mean, I already have.
She could be the one this year with Barb's not there. She could be the one to supply the Czech surprise this year.
Yeah. I could see it. I could see it definitely. So now that we've done the dark horses, it is time to look at our favorites for the Australian Open 2025.
Okay, so favorites, and this is where the messing around stops. This isn't about gambling odds. This isn't about making money. This isn't about who might be there or thereabouts. Some no dark horses here. This is the be all and end all. Who is going to win the Australian Open 2025? We've both picked three favorites. Let's kick it off with the men's, starting at number three. Who have you got?
So my number three player, I've gone for Novak Djokovic. My guy looks so motivated to get number 25. Like, I don't know. It just makes so much sense given he's won 10 Australian Opens. You know, will Andy Murray make any impact into the team? I don't think Novak would just add him because it's funny and, like, we all think it's cute that Andy Murray is coaching him. Like, he added him because he genuinely talked to him and it's like, you're going to add a layer to my game that I'm missing right now or that I can improve in, right? Like, I don't think Novak does anything for banter. I mean, the guy eats kale pancakes for a living, like, you know, like, and I think that he's the ultimate boogeyman in the draw, giving his number. And I think if the draw goes his way, meaning, like, no sinner, then it wouldn't shock me to see him win it. And he's a mentality beast. Like, you know, like, we've seen the guy, like, rip matches that he shouldn't have won at all, and he just suddenly wins them, like, you know. And I also think that the Australian crowd really pulls for him, which he really likes. So I don't know. I think if they put Novak, if Novak and Sinner play in the final, like, I would probably expect Sinner to win, but I think the crowd would be very pro Novak if that was the final. Like, I don't see who the crowd would root for if Novak, like, you know what I mean?
There's always a pretty big Serbian contingent in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I don't know how many Italians are going to be down under.
Well, the Carrot Boys probably be there. They're the Carrot Boys everywhere. Will be
there. Yeah. So I've gone for your boy, Taylor Fritz.
Wow, really? Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We haven't really talked about him at all today. But I don't know. I just got a feeling. I haven't put Novak in my top three. I don't...
Wow.
For some reason, I don't see it. I don't see it happening. Wow. And there is another big notable absence from my top three as well. But I don't know. I think first slam of the year, coming off what he did last year, he's going to be coming in with more belief than he's had in previous years. He's going to be coming in rejuvenated as well. I don't know. I just got a feeling that maybe... I'm not saying he's going to win it, because I think there is one out-and-out favorite for this tournament, but he could pull something off, and who knows? You never know what could happen, and it is the first slam of the year, and I don't think he's played a warm-up tournament. He played the United Cup, I think.
Just the United Cup, but he played good players in that day. He beat Hubie Hurkacz. Like, he had some tough matches along the way to clinch it, so...
Taylor Fritz, this is your time, man. Let's see what you
got.
I like it.
I was gonna put him in, but I could. I don't know. I had to pick Novak over him, and I think actually I'm gonna move to my number two, because I think this is your exclusion based on what you said. Because I've gone for Carlos Alcaraz, and you know why? So, like, I actually wasn't gonna put him in either, because I was thinking he got a whack ass haircut, right? I don't know if you've seen it. It's terrible, terrible haircut, like, terrible trim. I'm like, nah, so I'm already like, your stock's gone down in my eyes. But, right, when this guy, when the odds are like, when the moment is big, like, this guy, he just races to it, you know? Like, when he's hungry for something, like, he just, like, his level goes beyond. And I think he's hungry for that career slam, to be the youngest career slam winner in the history of tennis. For those who... join us and don't know too much about tennis, that means winning all four: Australia, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the US Open in your career. If Alcaraz wins the Australian Open, he's the youngest man ever to win all four. And I feel like that level of motivation is just gonna get him super hyped and motivated. Like, I'm kind of seeing like a potential Olympic run from him, where he was just decimating whoever was in front of him, and then he played Novak in the final, and he got, like, that was just an amazing game. Could have gone either way, right? But that's why I went for Carlos. I think he's gonna be so up for it that, like, I can't pick against him when he's this hungry.
Fair. Yeah, you know, maybe it's the fact that we're in the off season and you don't get a look at a lot of the players or how they're feeling, what their motivation is going to be like. But for some reason, I'm not feeling it with Carlos Alcaraz. It's a feeling, you know. It's just, you go this early stage in the season, you don't have a lot to go on. I'm going on feeling, and I'm not feeling it. Maybe it's because he had such a down finish to the year last year, but I don't know. I think he's going to struggle with the Australian Open, kind of like Rafa did, you know? Spaniards don't like it down under. So, we'll see. But, I mean, obviously he's always going to be in the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's not in yours.
He's not in mine. I mean, he's probably at four. He's probably at four.
At four,
me.
Okay.
And
so
maybe
who do
Taylor
you have
Fritz,
at two, then?
Who do I have at two? I've got Alexander Zverev at the two.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of just harping on what I said before when we were talking about him as a dark horse. I don't know. It's a feeling thing, right? Like, he's coming in. He played some of the best tennis of his life last year, but then fell short in so many tournaments, tour finals. He was Wimbledon quarterfinal, I think, French Open final. you know, went deep in a lot of tournaments but just fell short. So I think this offseason he's going to be one of the hungriest guys out there. That's the feeling that I get. And then what I said before about the pressure maybe being off now, now that these new guys are coming in and he wasn't able to beat them last season, maybe that makes it a little bit easier for him to be like, okay, maybe I won't get a slam, so what? But it's not going to stop me trying. So do I hope that he wins? Maybe not. But I don't know. It's a feeling thing, right? It's a feeling. And I think he should be in that conversation.
Yeah, that's fair, because I was actually also going to put him at number two. And then I was like, nah, go for the phenom, So I put him. But I think for me, Zverev would be four. Like, he would be. And actually, the Novak was really just because, like, I need to see him lift number 25. Like, that's the only reason. Because
that's where you and I differ. Yeah.
Yeah, because realistically, I think Zverev probably is a bigger favorite than Novak, but I don't know. I just feel like Novak has it. But like we said, I think we both have the same guy for number one, right? Like, and it's Jannik Sinner.
I don't know that we really need to talk about this that much either. I mean, his hardcourt season was insane last year. He's defending champ. We don't really need to talk about it. He just
got better throughout the year. Like, he looked so good in Australia in 2024, and then he looked better every single time I watched him. And like, he hasn't given me, like, until he looks human on a hard court, I will pick him in every single hard court tournament this year, without a doubt. Like, maybe the only one I wouldn't is Indian Wells, but like the rest, like, I'm picking him for all of them. Like, he's just on a different level, and like, I would be more surprised if he doesn't win it rather than anybody else winning it, to be honest.
Wow, fair, like, because he's just that good. He was that good last season. If he brings that again this season, it's gonna be tough for everyone else.
It's gonna be a good tournament, though. You should still watch it, even if we think Sinner is gonna win it.
No tennis tournament is straightforward. So
ever, especially the WTA tournament, which brings us along to our three favorites. So who have you gone for at number three?
At number three, I've gone with Qin Wen.
Me too. I've gone for exactly the same. I've also gone for Qingwen Zheng. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I think our top three might actually be the same then.
Who do you have at two then?
I've gone for Coco Gauff.
Me too.
Yeah, and then number one's gonna be Sabalenka. Yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're all in agreement then.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably have similar reasons as well. I mean, Qin Wen, great year last year, but she's not at the same level as Sabalenka just yet, or wasn't last year. But again, what I was saying about the sort of Zverev situation, she's gonna be hungry. She's gonna be, you know, she knows that she can beat those top guys. She beat Iga on clay for the Olympics. She made the final last year. She just needs to go that one step further.
Yeah, and the player, I would say the player she was in that Australian Open final is not the same player I watched at the WTA finals against Coco Gauff. She lost both matches, but the WTA finals version was such a dangerous player with that serve. Like, she just has a lot of weapons and she's a great athlete, so.
Yeah, I mean, the Australian Open final last year, she didn't really lay a glove on Sabalenka. It was very easy for Saba. So, yeah, and then always in Australia, there's always, you've got a lot of support from China as well, because you're a lot closer. It's similar to New Zealand, where you do have a big Chinese population as well. So, yeah, she's going to have a lot of backing there too. So, I've got her at the number three. And then number two, Coco Gauff.
Coco, yeah, I think the only one who can lay a glove on Sabalenka, to be honest. Like, I actually think she could beat Sabalenka. Like, the only reason I don't have her there is because sometimes she still seems to get the yips a little bit more than Sabalenka does, where, like, her serve just falls off out of nowhere. And the forehand, we've only really seen be good at the United Cup and at the WTA Finals. Is it going to be the same when she's playing a slam final, semi-final, something like that? But I personally think that she, to me, is the only one who can really trouble Sabalenka.
I mean, I think if Iga comes up against Sabalenka, if we get that final, then Iga can definitely trouble Sabalenka. But It's whether Iga can make it to the final. And for some reason, I have very little confidence in her doing that. And that's why she's not in my top three. But if Coco brings what she brought at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, she's going to be close to unstoppable, because she was so good at the WTA finals. All the things that had been an issue for her previously, her serve and her forehand, were non-issues. Whether that was because maybe it helped her that the the finals court was particularly fast, and I think Australia will be a little bit slower, but I think she's right there with Sabalenka in terms of the favorites to win this tournament.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I genuinely, I'm not even kidding when I say this, I think Coco Gauff, when she's firing all cylinders, I think she's the best player in the world. Like, I think she's better than Iga and Sabalenka. I think she has
to be
better.
Fair, I've heard you say this about Rybakina before as well. So.
But she might also be the best tennis player in the world. We didn't even talk about her.
I'm surprised she hasn't come up in our dark horse conversation, because she's not very talked about.
Yeah,
like,
honestly,
not expecting a whole lot from her.
Honestly, I think like the off field stuff is really, like, the fact that she has this whole ongoing WTA, like, banning her coach from coaching her, and she's saying, like, no, I've never been abused by him, and defending him and saying, like, oh, well, if he's banned, I'm going to buy him tickets, or I just won't go play tournaments that he's not allowed to play. Like, I just feel like she has way too much of a dark cloud, and I know she's super stoic and all this stuff, but, like, it's a lot to handle. It's a lot to handle. That's why I couldn't really pick her. I think in any other year, she'd be my top three, but...
Yeah, yeah. Do we need to talk about Sabalenka being the favorite at all? I mean, it's kind of the same as the Sinner situation. Hardcore, unstoppable last year.
Two-time defending champ in Australia as well.
Well, form was a little bit shaky at the WTA finals, I gotta say, but there's a lot of time to get your head screwed on again after that.
Absolutely. And I also don't know how much was that, like, oh, well, I finally secured year-end number one, and just like a bunch of stuff, just like, okay, like, nice, like, I'm number one, finally, I'm year-end number one, and just like, whatever, like, let's pack it up, go on the off season. I, you know, the finals is always like a weird tournament to take a lot of into account, because you don't know mentally where players are. Like, maybe some of them are already in Cancun in their head, you know, and like, but they have to go to Saudi Arabia, so like, it's not really that fun. But yeah, those were our favorites. That was our Australian Open preview. But stick around, because we have a little quick segment coming up for you right now.
30.
And finally, our final segment, nothing to do with tennis. You know, we said we like to chop it up sometimes, so we decided to pick five animals who you think you can beat in a fight. And they have to be rules. They have to be Australian animals, right? Second rule, has to be hand-to-hand combat, so you can't have a gun. Third rule, has to be in their habitat. So you can't be like, oh, well, I pick a shark in a boxing ring, because I will always beat a shark in a boxing ring. Shark got no hands.
Okay, let me throw one out there straight away. And let me know if you think you have any chance against this,
all right,
this behemoth of an animal. The Australian saltwater crocodile.
So that was not one of the five animals I put on my list. I saw it and I was like, nah, I don't have a chance, bro.
Australia's full of these predators, right? So Australia's saltwater crocodile can grow up to 7 meters long, 1,000 kilograms of crocodile, of reptile. They can swim up to 24 kilometers an hour, and their bite force is up to 3,700 pounds per square inch, powerful enough to crush bones instantly. What do you reckon? Are you taking it down?
I don't know. What's the jujitsu level of this crocodile?
What's its grapple game like?
Do you think, can a crocodile get out of a triangle choke? I don't think so.
I did see a video the other day of this crocodile trainer guy, where he's familiar with crocodiles, and he's got this crocodile with him in a pool or something like that, and he's just chilling with it, like, he's just holding it, and he's explaining how heaps of people in the comments were saying, oh, it's so cute that this crocodile loves you and you guys are such good friends.
Man, I know, like, exactly what video you're talking about, because I watch it too. Yeah. Go on. I know exactly the video you're talking about, yeah.
But he's, like, He goes, no, this crocodile doesn't love me. It's just that I know how to treat it so it doesn't bite my hand off. And so I think it has something to do with the fact that their eyes are like in a certain position on their head, right? Like it's they're looking outwards. So you can be outside the field of view of a crocodile.
Actually the reason why the crocodile isn't biting the guy is because it can't see him.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah, the crocodile is like in the water, like, oh nice, I'm chilling, something is lifting me up, I have no idea what, oh food, and like, you know, like the guy, like, what, he can't see, bro.
Because then the guy like moves his hand into a position, he's like, see if I move my hand here, and then the crocodile like tries to take a bite out of him.
Man,
right?
It was so fast as well. Yeah. And they do that like a twirl of death. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh man, that is crazy, bro. Like, but what no I was way.
Is I just sneak up on the crocodile and it's a blind zone, right? And just throw him one right in the nose, you know? And then one punch, it's all over. Riff, ring the bell. I'm thinking, I'm a heavyweight champ.
Don't be silly, jump the ghillie. I'm putting that crocodile in a guillotine. Get out of that one. Get out of that one, Croc.
Twist your way out of the death spiral your way out of that
death
one.
Death spiral your way out of this ghillie, my guy.
Oh, yeah. Throw us another animal. What do you got?
All right. So I've gone... I think I could beat up a teenage kangaroo.
A teenage kangaroo? I've actually got kangaroo on my list here as well.
Because I'm thinking, like, kangaroo, a lot on the tail. Like, if I get on the inside, pop, 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 in and out, you know? I'm talking quick. 1-2, 1-2, move around. Like, win a unanimous decision against a kangaroo. I'm not looking to knock it out. I'm just looking to win a fight. Like, I'm not going to outfight you. I'm going to outbox you. Like, it's over.
So... Okay, so they can kick really hard, apparently, a kangaroo. And apparently they're also quite feisty creatures. You don't want to go sneaking up on a kangaroo. Their kicks can generate up to 850 pounds per square inch of force, which is a lot. Powerful enough to break bones and disembowel an opponent, apparently.
Oh, and these guys are kicking themselves all day. Like, a kangaroo's stomach must be destroyed, dude. Like...
They're quite muscly characters as well.
They're huge, right?
Pretty bulked up. And then you also apparently they use their tail as like another limb, right? So they can like stand on it, and then during a fight they'll lean back on their tail to balance while delivering powerful kicks with both legs. That's a pretty fearsome attack.
I can't lean on my tail; it'll just snap in half.
And you're not going to run away from them as well. They can leap up to 9 meters at once, right? With speeds up to 40 miles an hour, 64 kilometers an hour. So if you're losing the fight, don't bother running. Like, it's over.
I just, you know, like, I feel like, do I have longer reach than a kangaroo? Like, potentially. Like, I got pretty long arms. Like, not
kangaroos
on the legs.
Are big, bro.
Yeah, I don't. That's why I said teenage kangaroo. I feel like teenage kangaroo, get on the inside, little Mexican style boxing, all to the stomach, you know, pop, pop, pop. Like, just get in a war with a kangaroo, maybe. I don't know. I think easy, you know, and then I have some give me's, like, oh yeah, like, I'm the king of this jungle type of animals that I know I can beat up. Koala, you're dead.
Koala,
platypus,
easy.
Platypus, under my foot. You're dead. Emu, you don't have hands, so catch these.
No, bro, you can't beat an emu. Your emu is fucking you up. It's got more range with its neck than you do with both of your arms put together.
The neck, like, look at his chin. He keeps his chin way too high up. I'm jumping that ghillie, bro. I'm jumping the guillotine on the emu.
You got a lot of aiming, right? Because there's a lot of neck to work with there.
There's so much neck on that thing. Like, I can get it somewhere, bro. I'm telling you, emu, you got it. Emu, catch these hands. And then the quokka. The quokka is so cute, but I could definitely
Wait, what's
be
the
in
quokka?
A fight. Look at a picture of a quokka, man. It's beautiful.
Hey, Jamie, pull that shit up for me.
It's Q-U-O-K-K-A. Quokka.
Quokka.
It's so cute. But I mean, the question was, can I beat it in a fight? For sure, man. For sure, I can beat that in a fight.
I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if I couldn't beat that in a fight. Have you ever heard of a Tasmanian devil?
Yes, it's that guy that like does the tornadoes.
What?
From the Looney Tunes. No, I don't want to test who your devil is.
I mean, they're pretty small, but they're probably, they look super feisty.
Nah, it's kind of like a honey badger. Like, I wouldn't fight a honey badger. Like, those things apparently are like, they're crazy. Like, they fight crocodiles and they win and stuff. Like, I'm not doing that, bro. Like, yeah. I already have to fight a kangaroo and an emu. Like, and a shark. Yeah. No, shark. No, I can't fight a shark.
Apparently, there are species of sharks that you probably could beat in a fight. I think one that I saw was called a zebra shark. Apparently, they're quite docile, and their teeth maybe don't penetrate as much. But, like, great white, obviously, you're not standing a chance. I think tiger shark, bull shark, you're also dead. But zebra shark, not that threatening. I reckon you throw it one punch, and, like, that's what they say, like, punch it in the nose.
To the nose, right? Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's that just one jab, like bam.
One, yeah, and it's in and out. I'm gonna throw out one more animal that maybe we shouldn't go looking to fight, but I thought it was really interesting. It's called the blue ringed octopus, right? And this one is just more of a scary thing that
you
might want to think about if you're going for a dip in the ocean in Australia. So it's tiny, right? It's only about the size of a golf ball.
Very small. Oh wow! Okay, yeah, very small. It's so cute, man.
Yeah. Apparently, it's really pretty as well. It's a, like a really pretty octopus-looking guy. But here's the scary part. If you don't want to step on one of these guys, it has a toxin, a tetrodotoxin is what it's called, which is a neurotoxin that can cause paralysis and death within minutes. It's a toxin that is 1,200 times more potent than cyanide.
What?
That is insane. And the craziest thing, it has a completely painless bite. So you could get bit by it and you'd be like, And then 2 minutes later, you're dead.
I'm trying to look for like bite pictures on the internet.
No, because they don't exist, man. They all drowned after being...
That is crazy, man. I don't think I could take that in a fight.
Because you try punch it and it would just...
Kill you.
Kill you. Yeah, yeah.
Literally kill you. That about wraps us up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that little finisher for us. Whether we can finish these animals in a fight is another question. I don't know whether we're going to take that out into the real world, but maybe in the future when we next year when we go full on Australian correspondent, we will find a kangaroo to fight.
Oh. You're catching these hands, Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah, in all seriousness, guys, thank you so much for joining us again. We really hope that you enjoy the Australian Open as much as we do. We will be back, obviously, for a review of the Australian Open. In the meantime, we'd love it if you hit us with a follow on our TikTok, @crosscourtconvy, which is crosscourt and then convy spelled C-O-N-V-E. And then on our Instagram, @crosscourtcombos, and on X with the same @crosscourtcombos. We hope to hear your feedback, hear your responses to this episode, and also how you guys are going to be enjoying the Australian Open. And we will see you very, very soon.
Don't forget, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Goodbye.